So as I've been talking over these last days about the 13th step of mindfulness of breathing, being the observation, settling back and observing the inconstancy of phenomena, how things are constantly renewing but also constantly passing, and that appearing and disappearing of our experience moment by moment. Certainly sometimes it's unfortunate that things pass away. Sometimes we're very fortunate that finally it's no longer here. And sometimes we're fortunate that things are arising, and sometimes it's unfortunate what's arising. It's painful or something. And sometimes it's neutral. So there's no particular prioritizing or valuing putting a value on the particular arising and passings that occur. It's not a discounting of things. It's not a celebrating of things necessarily. It's just seeing that actually this is kind of the nature of when we're really settled, really peaceful, not overlaying concepts and ideas on top of experience. This is what we experience. We're in the flow of our experience, flow of sensations and experience. But the great value of it is not in and of itself, like we're supposed to celebrate it or supposed to be depressed by it or something. It becomes a reference point for how valuable it is not to cling to any of it, not to contract around any of it, not to resist any of it. And especially in meditation, in real life, you know, there's certain things that should be held on to or resisted perhaps, but in meditation, to really learn to free ourselves from any movement of being for or against, holding on or pushing away. Because it kind of doesn't work, but also because this ability to observe and not get engaged and attached to things begins feeling so good. You feel that's where freedom is. And the core kind of catalyst for freedom in the teachings of the Buddha is this experience, this deep insight into inconstancy. And so the way in which the more free we become, the more inconstancy is a support for greater freedom. The more free we are, the more we see, recognize how we're trying to hold on to what is constantly changing, or how we've left the flow, or how we, you know, like put our hand out the window of a car and we have wind drag. We're kind of have wind drag. We put our hands into the river and trying to stop it. Or we picked up a bunch of handful of water and we left the river thinking we have the river still. There's all these ways in which we recognize that we've kind of left the flow of inconstancy, the flow of life, because we've gotten excessively attached or involved or clinging. And so see that in meditation, and to see that we're actually better off backing off, better off not clinging, that it's not so interesting to cling or to want. And so there's begins to be an inner psychological change that happens. And some of that is starting to become relaxing the search, relaxing the trying to do something or get something, or relaxing the need to know and searching to know. And because all that is kind of is too much. It's like leaning forward when we can just settle back in a sense. And then all these attachments we have, we start feeling them as being wind drag. We start feeling them as being interfering with the radiance of the heart, the beauty of the mind, the freedom of our lives. And we can see that they diminish us, the clinging, the attachments that we have, things we hold on to. And so there starts to be a fading away, disinterest, and a fading away of jealousy and envy and conceit and craving and hatred and resentments, you know, it can go on, the list is long, of things that we begin recognize, oh, this doesn't really serve me. This, I'm not so interested in this anymore. It's not like I have to be a good Buddhist and this is bad that I'm doing this, that I have to stop doing it. It's more like I'm no longer interested in this. This is less and less interesting to do. I've been resentful for 30 years, and I think that I'm getting tired of it. I think I see that it's not so interesting. I've been chasing after having the perfect physique for decades, and at some point I'm not really interested in presenting myself always with the perfect human physique, whatever that might be, and start losing interest in it. Always wanting to make more money or have status or I don't know what, all these things we're kind of chasing. There's a healthy kind of, oh, wait a minute, this doesn't serve me. This is not the best place to be. This is not the most wonderful way to be preoccupied with these things. I'm beginning to know something better. I'm knowing something about freedom and ease and peace. And I want to stress over again that the primary reference point for what I'm talking about here now is, in fact, meditation. Because outside of meditation, you might argue, well, wait a minute, isn't it okay to do it here or here? We need to do it here. I don't want to get into those discussions. What I want you is to really discover that in meditation, you don't have to be pursuing the perfect physique, more money, more status, more whatever it is that you're trying to do. In meditation, you can feel meditation itself, it's better, easier just to let go or not be involved in. And then to really have an experience, a qualitatively high experience of freedom, of ease, of peace, where we're no longer grasping or holding or resisting or tightening or contracting. That becomes your teacher. Rather than debating with me about, wait a minute, aren't we supposed to hold on here or resist that? It's not so interesting to debate with me. It really, for real spiritual life, you should be debating with yourself. When you have this deep reference point for peace, deep reference point for freedom, that's where it gets really interesting. That's where it really comes alive, this practice of freedom, and really kind of explore and find out what is really true for yourself. So with this observing and constancy, then there's a fading away of the interest in some of our attachments. And then there's a fading away of the attachments themselves. And so the word for the 14th step of Anapanasati, the Pali word is viraga, V-I-R-A-G-A. And there's two different translations of this word. And the one that I'll stress today is... it means the fading away. One observes the fading away of these attachments, and the fading away of our interest, our addiction to addictive interest in certain things that are not really serving us anymore. And so there's a fading away, and this speaks to something very important about this path of liberation in Buddhism, that sometimes there's a tendency to want to look for a sudden experience that the key to it all, that just unlocks it all, and then we're free forever. But a more mature way of seeing it is that a lot of it has to do with just fading away, a wearing away, dropping away, drop by drop, everything dries up or falls away. The evaporating of it, a phenomena of our attachment. And so raga, the root of the word viraga, can mean a dye that we color cloth with. And viraga, the V prefix, means a fading away or separating of that dye. And so one of the meanings is to fade away the dye. You dye some clothes and you leave it in the sun for too long and it gets bleached, the color fades away. And so, or just time fades it away. And so the fading away. And this, when we really feel the unsatisfactoriness, the offness, the discomfort of attachment, of clinging, of addiction, of all these movements of the mind that we have, and we start to feel, oh, this is lightening up, it's loosening up. There's a lightening, a lifting of a cloud, and a letting go, a relaxing. And then the mindfulness practice is to be available to that fading, to be open to that fading, to allow for that fading. Because if we go right back into clinging, we reinforce more clinging. We strengthen that capacity to cling and attach and resist and be addicted to things. But once we start feeling this process of fading away, then the mindfulness practice is to be available to that fading, available to it, so we don't reinforce the opposite. So one trains breathing in, observing fading away. One trains breathing out, observing fading away. So that's one of the meanings of viraga. And then tomorrow I'll talk a little bit about the second meaning, which is dispassion. And at least that's often how it's translated into English. And probably not a very good translation, but that's for tomorrow. So, thank you. And this comes to an end.